Okay, welcome back.
And in this podcast, I'm very excited for this podcast. And I know I said that about every podcast, but I truly mean it every single time. I'm very excited for this podcast. So in this podcast, I wanted to talk about fishing whitewater and fishing, not whitewater, but fishing big surf conditions slash like hurricane fishing. And something that's very interesting that I didn't really think of until this second when I really started getting in here hurricanes affect the fishing in many different ways. Most typically, people believe fishing in a hurricane is like the classic, surf casting, like what everybody thinks classic surf casting is. Big surf conditions, casting the monster waves, a lot of white water, very frothed up fish, and everything like that. But something that I feel like people don't actually take I don't think people really think about this part of fishing. And I've been fortunate enough to learn a lot. And I feel like I've touched on the subject before, but you know, you learn so much every single year. And I've been very fortunate to fish with some of the best fishermen in the game this past season. And learned a lot from them. And I also learned a lot on my own and fishing in some really awesome areas and during some very interesting conditions. I believe that two of our like new and full moons were hurricanes last year. And I think that that's something that I really wanted to kind of touch on because I learned a lot in both of those moon phases. And one scenario is calm water scenario, but still very, very interesting. And the other one is obviously the classic big surf conditions. And these two things, I mean, one of them I was really not expecting to learn. And what I wanted to get into is with that one, honestly, it's just shocking to me. So I happened to be driving by a Back Bay Harbor inlet area. And I'm driving by and I happen to look out just at the water and I'm seeing a blitz going down. So I happen to have my rod and a Rebel jumping minnow on my rod, and I went out there and I started whacking fish. And it was interesting because it was a huge hurricane. I'm talking about big winds. It was rainy and windy, and it was really gnarly out. And what happened was a lot of bass got pushed into the calmer water because they didn't really want to go and fight the big surf conditions. A lot of the bass went into the calmer water because a lot of the bait went into the calmer water. And in this day in particular, it happened to be like a river herring of some sort. They're probably 4 or 5 inch herring, and they're just getting annihilated from bass that were 20 inches to like 30, maybe 33 inches was the biggest one I got. But it was every single cast for 2 or 3 hours I was catching fish. And I honestly was going out that night, but you know, that bite was really good, and I was better than the bite that I got on in the evening, where, you know, the fish that I was catching that evening were considerably larger, but the bite was not quite as fun, in my opinion, to what I was going after all that day. It was just such consistent action and such aggressive fish. And I love blitz fishing. It's just such a predatory thing. But that's something that I really wanted to touch on. I was like thinking to myself, this is very interesting. I bet that not a lot of people experience this or really look for it that often. And I think it's an underutilized tactic or place to fish during hurricanes. And that is in the back bays, in the estuaries, in the harbors, where a lot of that bait is going to get pushed into because they don't want to have to go fight the big surf. They don't want to have to go fight the big wind conditions. They want to go back in that estuary and just relax. And sure enough, there was some nice bass that were back there feeding on them. And I was very impressed by that because I'd never seen that before. And to the magnitude that was. And it was something I learned right there. I've read in articles that sometimes that happens, but I hadn't seen it for myself happen before. And that day was very interesting. I saw it for myself. I saw lots of bass being very aggressive during a day. And I'm talking about, it was choppy. I mean, this was not like, oh, you know, it was a little bad weather. No, I'm talking 40 mile an hour winds. I'm talking about huge, massive wave sweep. And I'm talking about, I'm throwing my little Rebel jumping minnow out there, twitching it as hard as I can. Boom, there's a bass, explodes on it. The estuary water was muddy. It was not clean. It was very muddy water too. So that was something that I kind of wanted to bring up because I've never heard anybody else talk about this before. And I thought that it's something that if you especially are new to fishing in estuaries and you want to go learn it, I think that if there is a hurricane, I would definitely go check out the estuaries. And who knows? I mean, sometimes depending on wind direction and where the estuaries are, obviously the fishing is not going to be better. If you have that onshore blow and the water isn't too muddy, you should have a good chance of getting to some consistent action. If you're lucky, you're going to find blitzing fish. And that's something that I was kind of surprised that I saw myself was, you know, bass that were being that aggressive and that on bait fish in the middle of August, or it wasn't August, was it July maybe? I don't know. It was one of the storms during one of the moon phases. But then the other like major big wave condition that, you know, I fish a lot of. So as I say a lot of times, but to anybody that's new to listening to this podcast, I fish a lot off the rocks of Cape Ann. It's my favorite place to fish. I'm most comfortable fishing there and I'm pretty good. I do pretty well for myself off the rocks, and I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot that in this past season, where you know you have these huge big water conditions. I'm talking about they're scary, like scary water conditions where you have huge waves that you're crashing on the rocks and just throwing water 15 feet in the air. You know, one of those things you kind of have to tether yourself to the rock to not get washed away. It's like, it's that kind of conditions. And I did pretty well. I've done very well. I've had some of my most, the most angry fishing experiences that I've even caught on tape, where you're just losing every single plug in your bag because these fish are so aggressive. And I'm talking like I fish really heavy gear, and one of the rods that I loved fishing with this past season, and I fished a lot of during those conditions where you had huge surf, you had to cast really far out into really, really windy and wavy conditions, was the Lamaglass Carbon Surf Canal Series rod, which is like 2 to 8 ounce rod, but you could probably throw 12 ounces with it. I mean, it's a beast of a rod, and I think it's underrated in that scenario. But the casting range on that thing is absolutely amazing, especially with it being a faster action rod, when you're trying to work a plug, and it really works it well in windy conditions. It's not all over the place like a more moderate action rod. You're feeling like everything your plug's doing. You have solid connection to it, and even for such a heavy rod, it's still a very sensitive rod. So I did very well with that rod this season, and so I'm using a big rod. Like I'm talking about, to put a bend in that rod, it's got to be a big fish. And I'm also using a Vanstall VSX 275 on that rod in these scenarios. And that was honestly not big enough for some of these fish. And I got honestly whooped by most of those bass. I ended up breaking off on 80% of the fish that I hooked. I landed like 3 or 4 fish. And one of the biggest ones that I landed, which was probably high 30-pound bass, ended up snapping my leader as I was, you know, wrapping it around my hand. It just snapped, which, you know, still gives me nightmares. But, and it's not like that big of a deal because obviously I leadered and touched the fish. So technically it's a caught fish, but I always like to touch up the fish a little bit. I like to get a good release, take the rig deal out of its face. And that would have been good if I could have done that, but whatever. It happens. So I wanted to talk about a few different things and tactics I really used last season, one of which you can't use now, but with the new regulations for striped bass, but something that I really wanted to kind of touch on a little bit just because I did so well with them in the past, but also just tactics I used last season that produced big fish during big wave conditions. And I'm talking about even like super strike darters were having a hard time like cutting into that current and like being, I mean, it's tough. So when I guess I kind of want to like, I talk a lot about wave sweep, and I haven't before in the podcasts. And so what I mean by wave sweep is, in my opinion, like you have set current that's just going to be flowing in one direction, and then you have wave sweep. So wave sweep is where, you know, a wave crashes and then it's going to get sucked back out. And a lot of people call that like a rip, where like the rip current is the rip current is waves, you know, getting sucked out. It's that undertow. And it can be the strongest current there is. I mean, that rip current, that sucking out of the wave is very, very powerful. And honestly, a lot of the time, shocking that bass can even survive in the conditions that they do. Like they're hunting in that. And there's a good reason for that, because no other bait fish is going to be able to sit in that current like the bass can do. And they sit there with their big tails and they just cruise and they just have their tails going. They have their faces pointing into the current. And then when a big bait fish comes by, they pounce on it. So, there's many different ways you can present a bit like a plug to them. But when the conditions are that huge, people get, it's, they're intimidating and they're hard to learn. I don't know what that was. Anyway, I don't know what that noise was, but they're intimidating is what I'm trying to say. So when you have huge waves, a lot of people get intimidated by those conditions. Not only is it, you know, dangerous if you get swept off a rock, but, it's also, I don't know. It just, you have that little bit of fear when you're fishing, and you, for good reason, you should have fear when you're fishing that, because you'd be crazy not to. And you also, it's just, it's kind of hard to believe that there'd be big fish in these conditions. So it's kind of hard to pay attention and really feel out what your plug's doing. And I think that that is some of the most technical fishing that only some of the best fishermen can do. And by no means am I some of the best fishermen. I'm just saying, like, people that know how to fish big waves and big surf conditions are in my opinion, some of the best fishermen out there, just because it's such a hard thing to do. And this is something I'm still learning, and I'm just sharing like my personal experiences and hopefully something that you might be able to relate to and might help you a little bit out if you're in these similar conditions. So, you know, there's a few times where I had some big surf conditions. And I'm having a hard time. So even Super Strike darters are getting swept out, where I'm digging them in, but I can't dig them in enough because the surf is so violent that the waves are so, they're sucking the plug so fast that it's just getting, it's getting blown up onto the surface and just swept out. And that's a really hard thing to fish. So, cause you put it into the current, you're not even reeling because the current is ripping so hard. The plug is swinging in the current, but too high for what I think the bass are going to be looking at. And that not always the case. Is that going to be a bad thing? Like, there's going to be many scenarios where being able to get that plug where you can sweep it like that is the best thing you can do. But in some scenarios that I was fishing where the waves were just so massive that, and the sweep was so aggressive that I couldn't even hold a Super Strike darter in there. And it could be lack of skill, honestly. Like, I mean, could be lack of skill, but I don't think so. I think the waves are just too big and they're just too strong. And so I was having to resort to other plugs like bottle darters are a great one that will dig into that stuff. Another one that I was really using a lot of was needlefish. Needlefish are fantastic. It's deep, fast sinking needlefish. Believe it or not, even though it's kind of hard to think that in such crazy conditions, a needlefish that is the size that it is going to be able to give off enough of a profile that a bass is going to be able to find it. It actually does. So that's another plug that I'd used in those scenarios. I was also using glide baits. And those are kind of the plugs, glide baits. And then the last one that I used and was very successful with, probably the most successful out of all of these, was bucktails. And bucktails range, I mean, I was throwing 3-ounce bucktails and I was literally feeling them getting swept so aggressively up and over the rocks. The waves were sweeping them so fast that I'd feel it hit a rock and get swept up and over the rock. And that was when they're getting absolutely crushed, because I just feel it drifting in the current, hitting a rock, getting into that current that's blowing up and over the rock and just getting blown up and over the rock and sucked back down on the other side. And boom, there's a fish there waiting for it. And I was even able to do that during the day. This is not even at night. I'm talking about, I was able to fish in these huge surf conditions during the day and hooking into 30, 40 pound fish. Not all the time was I able to land those bass, but I was at least hooking into them. So, and the only reason I wasn't able to land a lot of them is just because of where I was. The waves were so big, and I had to be so far back in the rocks in front of me were so sharp that if they dug down deep right at the wrong time, they're cutting, getting, I was getting cut off a lot of the time. And I got a tip, honestly, from somebody on Instagram, because I was DMing them about this, and they said to me, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on your username if you're watching this, but they're saying put on like 200 pound or 100 pound braided line, tie with an FG knot, give yourself like 20, 30 feet of it, and then attach it to your 80 pound fluoro. And that will, if the bass takes you into a rock, it's not going to cut you off. So I haven't tried that yet. That was actually later in the fall when this guy told me that. So I'm excited to try that out this season. I think that's going to be something that I'm definitely going to want to do. And something that I hope works, because it's going to be, I think it's going to be good. I think that that's a very good tip. But regardless, those were kind of the three or four plugs that I really used a lot of in those scenarios. And there's different levels to it. So if you can get away with throwing a Super Strike darter or something like that, it's a great profile plug. It mimics a lot of the bigger bait fish that would get lost in that current, like you know, black sea bass, tautog, lobsters. There's all sorts of different bait fish in my area that it would kind of mimic. Bunker, herring, mackerel, like anything could get sucked out in that little swell, in that really strong rip current, and be about that size and get smoked by a bass. So you can imagine there's many different things that it's going to be kind of mimicking. Because if you think about it, bass are more feeling their surroundings than they are seeing them. So they're going to feel that profile of the darter kind of just swinging through the current the same way they will feel the needlefish. So if you have conditions where you have this rip current, I'm talking about you're not even reeling. So imagine you have some boulders out in front of you, and then there's a deep channel, and this is my favorite way to fish. You have a shallower section of boulders where waves are crashing onto. So what's happening there is it's going to be washing a little bit of bait fish up and out of that, where either there's going to be smaller like bait fish that is going to be feeding on that, which is going to be making the bass are going to be feeding on. Or it's going to be the bass feeding on the exact stuff that's getting washed out of those small boulder field areas or those shallower boulder sections. Like say you had a lobster, or say you had a tautog or something that was in those shallower rock areas and it gets hit by a giant wave and washed out of that. It's going to get washed out of there and right into the strike zone for the bass. So so you have that going for you. And I like to find like a little deep channel, and then maybe it gets shallower again. And I like to fish in that little deep channel there. And what's going to happen is those bass are going to be glued to the bottom, and they're just going to be looking up. And what I mean by that is they're going to be trying their best to get out of the current and be in, as because they don't want to be directly in that and just going crazy. They can be, but that's like an extreme scenario. A lot of the time they're going to be glued to the bottom, trying to get out of the current the best they can, looking up, waiting for something for them to feel, because they'll be able to feel a bait fish coming at them, waiting to be able to feel that bait fish. And then they'll just zoom up out of the rocks and smash it. And then they'll come right back down underneath it. So I like, honestly, if you can throw, and this is another one I'm kind of going to toss in there along with the darters and the, like a Super Strike darter type plug, or like a Danny plug, they can kind of, you can kind of fish them in the same, like the same intensity of surf. I found that you can kind of like fish them in like a same like intensity of surf. And so in that scenario, what I like to do is I like to cast out, I like to maintain tension, but I'm really fishing the sweep. So you have a lot of current that's getting swept by and out past these rocks. I cast a plug in there, I dig it in, and I let it work through that sweep. And I'm covering a lot of water. I'm reeling, you know, to keep maintaining tension, but a lot of the time, once it gets parallel to you, you can let the plug do all the work. It's going to get parallel to you or a little less than parallel, and then it's going to dig in, and you're going to feel it dig in, and you're going to be able to feel that plug working in that current all the way out until it gets past you, and then you can just reel it in. And that's covering a lot of water, that's giving a lot of vibrations off, and most of the time, that's the most successful way to really get bass to react. Now, there are many scenarios where the where it's just too strong of a current and too strong of a sweep. So you're not going to be able to throw Danny plugs or any other metal lips. And you're not going to be able to throw, I mean, there's certain metal lips you'll be able to throw, deep diving metal lips, which are my favorite, honestly, to throw. Now that I'm really getting into the weeds here, but they're definitely my favorite to use. The other ones that are also, like, if you can get away throwing a darter, I'd do it for sure, because again, as I said, very good profile, whatever. So that those two, if you can get away with throwing like a metal lip or some sort of a darter, that's like definitely up there with really solid plugs to use. Then after that, a glide bait of some sort, either a wooden glide bait or a you can use one of those Sabeel stick shads and stuff. So you can throw those out because of the profile that they are. And they do very similar movements to a darter. They have a good profile, but they can most of the time sit in pretty strong current. I mean, I don't think there's a current out there that you won't be able to get those things to work in. So you cast that thing out and you drift it right in through that area. It's a great profile. It most of the time will work. Another one that's great, and a little, if the bass are not, if they're being maybe a little bit more finicky, or you really just want to put off more vibrations in the water, the bottle darters are amazing. I mean, they are very rattly. They give off a lot of vibrations, and they really can get finicky bass to strike. And you're definitely going to have a bass notice that it's in the area. But I have had many scenarios where they don't want that. There was one night in particular where I was throwing bottle darters to start because I just had my brain, because the super strikes darters were they weren't enough. And I was like, I had my brain. I was like, okay, obviously the current's too strong for them, so I'm going to throw bottle darters. So I was throwing the bottle darter, and I was getting nothing. And then I finally switched it up, and I ended up throwing either a needlefish or a glide bait, and then all of a sudden I started banging fish every cast. And so I threw the glide bait, and obviously you're going to fish it the same way. You cast it up current, you let it work through the current, whatever. Same thing with the bottle darter. You cast it up current, and that thing digs in deep. And honestly, you don't really need the reel out that fast. You can just, as long as you feel it vibrating, you know it's working, and you can just let it do its thing. And the great thing about that is the casting range on that is tremendous. And so you can cast those things a mile. Then we get into something like a needlefish. So there's many needlefish. Like, you can buy needlefish from anybody. I think the plastic ones are probably the best, just because they can sink really fast. Although I do have some wooden ones that are pretty heavy and would sink in those scenarios. But being able to throw a needlefish obviously is going to be the best. And when it comes to being able to ride in anything, like if you have huge waves that are coming up and they're crashing down, and you're casting a needlefish into that, it's going to sit in that stuff, and it will just sit perfectly in that. And if there are bass there, you have a really good shot at getting them on the needlefish. And then obviously, bucktails are probably second for me, just because I find that bucktails love to get themselves stuck, especially in boulder fields, but they're so productive. I end up buying, I think I probably have 40 or 50 bucktails right now, and I will probably have 5 or 6 by the end of the season. If not, I will have to buy a whole new like set. And I'm not even joking you right now. I literally probably have 40 bucktails, and I'll lose almost every single one of them this season. Obviously, I do some guiding, so the people I'm going to be guiding are probably going to be losing some of them too. But I go through these things like crazy, just because I fish a lot in the boulder fields, and they're so productive. You can catch schoolies on them all day, but then if there's a big fish there, it's gonna crush it. And I had so many nice bass on bucktails. Unfortunately, I only landed a handful, but I had some solid fish on them. I really, really learned a lot about fishing bucktails this season, probably more than any other season I've ever fished. And I'm talking about the same thing. You know, you're casting that thing out there and you're letting it sink down. You feel it just swimming up and over those rocks. I mean, it's really awesome when you really feel connected to that bucktail. It's definitely like an extension of your hand almost. And you've heard other guys talk about this. And if you haven't, I mean, a lot of people talk about it, but you can really feel the bottom structure. You can feel the current. You can feel where it goes from you know, being ripping strong to a little bit more slacked and then ripping strong again. And that's something that you can't really do with any other plug. Maybe a needlefish is the second closest to that, but you fish them very similar. And I get a lot of questions with needlefish and a lot of questions with bucktails. How do you fish them? I reel them at a moderate speed, just enough to keep them off the bottom. Whether that means if that's faster, if you're fishing 3 ounces, or if that's really creeping it slowly or not reeling it at all. That's what you have to do to fish those things. That's what you have to do. You just let those things do their thing in the water, and that's when you're going to get the best strikes. People have this like fear that if their plug isn't doing anything, it's not going to catch a fish. That's not always the case. If you think about it, if a bait fish is swimming along through the water, if you've ever looked at a bait fish that is not aware, not like a stressed out or anything, and it's just slowly cruising, you don't see it going all over the place and acting like crazy. It's pretty much swimming in a straight line, and maybe it's using its tail fin to go like this, or its pectoral fins to just slowly swim it through the water. It's not going all crazy like. So that alone is something that is a very unique thing to bucktails and very unique thing to needlefish, where they don't really have a crazy action to them. They're very subtle action to them, but they're very productive, and people say they're productive, and you never fully know how productive they are until they work in one of those scenarios where you're like, wow, I am absolutely whacking fish every single cast in this plug and nothing else was doing it. And that's something that I can say that I've not done that much on darters, and I've not done that much on glide baits, but I've done on needlefish and I've done on bucktails. I've whacked fish, and I'm talking about like cast after cast after cast, 30 inches to 40 inch bass all night long on needles and bucktails. And the greatest thing about bucktails, if you can get away with throwing them, is that they're single hooks, so they're easy on the fish and easy to release, so you can really catch fish on them. But there's downsides to everything. Anyway, so we kind of covered the wave sweep deal a little bit, something else that's kind of important to that is you have, you know, the waves, but then you want to always time your casts to be most productive. So if you're casting right into where a wave is crashing down, it's going to get blown out and you're going to have to catch up really fast. But if you're waiting for that wave to just crest and you cast just over that wave as it's cresting, it lands, you get it to sink down a little bit, then you can have waves that are crashing, but you're at least going to be able to work a little bit of the water. And that's what's super important. If you cast out and you time your casts well, just over the top of a wave or just after a big wave crashes, you're going to be able to fish that water. And that's very important. It's probably one of the most important things to do. And you'll see a lot of people that are inexperienced make that mistake and just cast into the big surf and their plug gets all tumbled and tangled up and you have all the slack in your line. That's useless. You need to cast out, you need to catch your line, you need to get that thing in the water, you have to maintain tension to it as best you can, especially if there's a crosswind, and you have to make sure that you maintain as much tension to that plug as possible. You dig it in quick or you let it sink, but you're definitely feeling that plug in the water and you're maintaining tension, because sometimes it's as instant as touching the water to that bass being there, because a lot of the time the wave will crash, those bass will come up and out of the rocks and they are right there, and if you land your plug, you can land it pretty much right in their mouths, because they'll come up and out of the structure like you wouldn't, like so quick. And very, very important to make sure that you're doing is timing your casts to make sure that each one of your casts is you know, you wait for a wave or you make sure there's not a big wave coming so you can really work the water column, you can really get it into the water there and definitely work that stretch of water. I kind of touched on this a little bit, but there's a legitimate story I had to this where I was fishing a super strike darter, and it was during one of these hurricanes. I had a decent bite going on, and I'm talking about, we had a bunch of bass that were all solid size fish. I mean, they're 20 pound fish, 15, 20 pound fish. Nothing like, there's a few bass over 30 that you'd get on eels or rigged eels, but they're mostly darter fish for me at least. And so, and generally what like darters does and a darter does, and it's like a super strike darter is probably like the brand that everybody uses as far as darters go. It's kind of the universal darter brand. But you know, darters do something very interesting. They work very well when bass have competition, but they don't work as well when the bass does not have competition. And what I mean by that is, there's certain plugs like spooks that work very well when bass have competition, but when they don't really feel like going after it. I think a super strike darter is one of those plugs where it won't work very well on individual fish. So if you're hunting for one bass in one particular spot, it's not going to do you that much justice. Most of the time when you have one bass there, it's going to be very hard to get regardless of what you're throwing. A few plugs that do well with that are fishing lures and eels or whatever, but Danny plugs or Metal Lips are fantastic at culling a singular big bass that is being not super aggressive, but is there. And another one that is obvious is eels. Eels are probably the other one for me that is just very productive when you're hunting for that singular bass or if there's aggressive fish. I mean, eels are eels. They will catch fish like crazy. And so will Metal Lips do particularly. But darters, for example, are one of those plugs that don't necessarily cull fish every single cast. And there's been nights where I'll be throwing a darter and I won't be getting anything on it. And I'll throw on a Metal Lip and I'll be getting hits every single cast. But in this night particular, we were during a hurricane. There were a lot of bass around. It was enough that I could dig that darter in. There's big surf and there's some pictures of me out there that I posted on my Instagram of me getting completely destroyed by waves. But I was hooked into I ended up dropping this bass, but I was casting it fit like as hard as I could into these waves, right into where the waves were sweeping out, and I was working it in, and I was just reeling it slowly, and I was just like letting it do its thing in the water, just reeling it nice and slow and just letting it do its thing. And that's what you got to really get over, the fact of not really feeling it that well, but knowing that it's doing its job. And I was just letting it do its thing, and then I got pummeled by a fish, and I hook into this fish. And it just starts screaming line. And you never know. I mean, obviously, you never know how big those fish are. It sucks. I would imagine that it was one of those 20-pound bass just mixed in that I was catching. But it could be huge. But regardless, I dropped that fish. But it was one of those deals where I was catching bass that were probably 43, like all day I was catching them on pencils. And the waves were building all day. And I was catching them. They're all cookie cutter 43s. At night, I caught one 43 on a glide bait. A Pumba Plugs fatty glider was the one I was using, and I caught another one on the darter, and that was just what I happened to be catching them on. And I cast it out, and I'm reeling this thing in. I'm getting huge waves just pounding me, but I'm waiting. So I wait. You hear the wave come up, and you see the horizon disappear. The wave crash. You rip your cast out as fast as you can. Get it out there. Dig it in. You're reeling it slowly, slowly. And you feel it coming closer and closer. And then all of a sudden, bam, you hook into this fish. And it just tears off line. I'm tearing off line. And I'm getting it in. I'm reeling down. And I'm getting in nice and slow. Trying to maintain tension. I have huge waves crashing all around me. And then I get up close. And this is where timing is everything. Because I have to stand a little bit farther back than I would like to be. Just because there is a lip of rocks. And it is brutal. Because I'll get bass right there. And then a wave will suck out. The line will go down. The bass will run in that current. And it will snap me off instantly. So I was dealing with that all night. I broke off on every single plug in my bag pretty much that night. And I was waiting for this one in particular. I had the wave crash. The bass kind of float up. I reeled down. I pulled it up. I finally got it perfectly where I timed it with a wave to wash it up and over the rocks. And I got it into this little tide pool. I ran down, grabbed it, a beautiful, like 44-incher. I was so stoked on that. And that's what it was that night. I mean, it was a lot of that size fish. Like 43s to 44s, a few 38s. Like it was some solid quality bass. And then I won on a rigged deal. And this was another, like, you know, it was a gut-wrenching fish here because it was by far the heaviest. I had this huge rig deal that was probably 24 inches. I had huge hooks in it. I throw the thing out there. I'm reeling it. I'm getting whacked every so often on it by, like, solid fish. I knew they're solid fish. I got this one whack, and it felt so good. I pop the fish as hard as I can with it. It runs, and then it spits the hook. I'm like, what is happening here? I reel in the eel, and the eel's threaded through itself. So the bass, and this is the scary part, you can see the scuff mark of how big of the mouth of the bass was. And I kid you not, the mouth of the bass was that big. And if you don't realize how big that is for a striped bass, I'm talking 35, 40, 50 pound fish. Like, that's how big that mouth of that fish was. So obviously that's a huge range, but it wasn't a schoolie, put it that way. Like, it was a solid fish. It was on the upper end of how big the bigger fish that I was hooking that night. Because then 5 casts later, I have that same pop. I jacked that fish as hard as I can. And I hooked it with the back hook this time. And I'm fighting this fish like crazy. And I'm grabbing my spool and I'm pulling. I'm reeling down, grabbing my spool, and I'm pulling it up. And I'm pulling it up out of the rocks. Finally get that thing washed over. And it's easily in that, you know, 35, 40 pound class fish. Like, it was 45 to 48 inch bass. It was in like thick head and shoulders. Like, it was a beautiful fish. And then I finally wrap the thing around my hand and I'm pulling up and it snaps off. And it ends up washing out, and I end up trying to grab it, but, you know, it was a nightmare, and I had to deal with it. I've been dealing with the unfortunate of the, like, short circumstances of that night, because that was happening a lot to me that whole night, where I was having bass keep getting off and getting off and getting off, and I was just like, it was a nightmare. But that's where I kind of want to go into something that I really found was productive. And that was eel jigs. And this is something that I've talked a little bit about, because I learned about it from the like Comanche surfcasting guys. When I was in Montauk, they were talking a lot about this and how productive it was, and all the 40, 50 pound fish that they are catching that year. And they caught extraordinary fish all season long on eel jigs. And when you use an eel jig, you can get it down underneath that, like, you could fish it like a bucktail. So now, where a lot of the time where you have these huge wave sweeps, you can't really fish rig deals. But now you can cast a 3-ounce jig head with a strip of, with an eel tail on it out there, and let it sink deep down underneath the current and let it wash like a bucktail. You get the flavor of an eel in there, and it's lights out. And I was only, unfortunately, I was only able to fish it a handful of times later in the fall, but I mean, that was deadly, and that was something that I was really shocked by, how well that worked. Just be able to cast that thing out there, let it sink down in there, and having that eel flavor to it, I mean, that's a deadly combination, and especially in those scenarios, it's something that I really want to fish more of, and it's probably one of the things I'm most excited for this season, is to fish a hurricane and to fish those eel jigs. And so I'm excited to do that. And, there's a lot of other things. Like, I've got some big, needlefish, like really big needlefish that I'm going to be fishing that are heavier and stuff. And I'm excited to fish those, because it's a big profile. And hopefully that will really, stand out to those bass in those scenarios where I need something to stand out like that. So, I'm very stoked on this season. I have a lot of good ideas for things to fish. And I guess cosmetically, a lot of the rods that I was using was either the Canal Carbon Surf or the GSB 10 foot, 2 to 7 ounce rod, I think was the one that I really, fished a lot. And I fished with the, Vanstall VSX 275, 80 pound braid, 80 pound max quattro braid, Spiro barrel swivel. I think it was either the, 100 pound, or maybe 100, what are the TA clips? 75 pound TA clips, or the 175 pound TA clips, tactical anglers clips. Those are like the ones I'd use the most of. And, I was fishing a Spiro power swivel, and I was fishing the, 230 pound Spiro power swivels. I have them all over there, so I can read my labels. That's the good thing about having everything organized like that, is you can really know what you actually use. And so those are what I was using a lot of. I was using the 80 pound Blue Label Seaguar line for my leader material when I was fishing in those scenarios. But a lot of the time it wasn't enough. And as I said, I got my teeth kicked in by those bass time and time again during those hurricanes. And it was because I had to stand far enough back that I would literally not get washed away. And you know, if you get washed off those rocks, you're gonna be in trouble. And so the important thing for me is I know how to swim pretty well. If I have a wetsuit on, it's going to give me, and my stormer jacket, it's going to give me a lot of buoyancy. And so I know that if all else fails, you can drop everything and swim. And that's what is really important when wearing, it's something I highly suggest wearing a wetsuit over waders in those scenarios, just because I believe that it's just more protection in many scenarios. I've been hit by waves during like hurricanes or just after hurricanes where you literally get crushed by a wave, and that wetsuit's going to give you the extra protection. You're not going to get super cut up on the rocks and stuff. It's very important to wear a wetsuit and a stormer jacket too, because they're very protective on you. And I've been hit a few times, and I'm generally pretty safe, and I always try to fish, especially when the conditions are big like that. You always want to try to fish with someone when the conditions are big like that, because it's scary. I mean, you got to be very cautious in what you're doing and take very calculated risks. Unfortunately, a lot of the places that I fish, I know inside and out. I know exactly when I get there how big the waves are and what the biggest wave possible could be washing through there, and if I'd be okay or not. Sometimes I've had to be humble, and I drive 20 minutes to get there. I get out there and I walk out to the spot. I sit there and I take a look at the waves, and I'm like, I can't do this. You know, I'm gonna get washed away, and I have to turn around. And I'll turn around, I'll walk back to my car. And you gotta be willing to do that in those scenarios, because it is super dangerous, and people do die, and people have died. Like, you hear about it every once in a while. Every year or so, somebody on Cape Ann is gonna get washed off a rock somewhere and drown. I mean, it happens very consistently just in my area, not alone, like, let alone up and down the coast, it happens. So you just gotta be very aware of what's going on. I definitely stress taking a look at that. But, you know, as we talked about earlier in the podcast, it's very interesting that those fish, if you don't always have to go fish off of the rocks when it's like this. I would say it's generally when the big surf happens, especially for Cape Ann, the beaches are not as great. Obviously, you can happen upon some pretty good rips and stuff that might produce, but I definitely would either suggest trying to head back into the estuaries or back bays, or really going off the rocks. I mean, I had a comment on my last podcast that was like, oh, you know, I was something like, it's really hard. The parking and stuff is very hard. And I definitely agree with that. I was like, there's a funny saying that I always say, it's like the more expensive the house, the better the fishing. So like, if you're fishing in front of the more expensive the houses you're fishing in front of, the better the fishing is. But that just seems to be the unfortunate case, that there's just very few spots that are accessible, and you got to be very fortunate either with parking or biking and whatever. It's just very, very tough to fish a lot of areas on Cape Ann. It's a lot, and especially for Cape Ann, it's very, there are many areas that would probably hold fish all the time, but you got to follow your bait and your wind. And the hurricanes are very interesting because they're not the best wind directions. For Cape Ann, south winds are kind of tough. So you always end up fishing like a crosswind. It's a lot of the time you'll have like a southwest wind. So you end up always having to fish like a crosswind somewhere. And that's always very tough because you got to predict what's happening. So a lot of the time you try to find those areas where it's calmer. It's on the other side of a point or something where the stuff is going to be a little bit calmer. And maybe the bass will be kind of hanging out outside of the rips. But I do have to say, very important, and I'll stress it again, you got the waves. You got a shallower area into a deeper channel. And that is very, very important. That deeper channel is something that is very productive. And I highly, highly suggest looking at areas where you have shallow water and then a deep little cut through that area. It gives this little area where the wave sweep kind of dumps out, and the bass really love hanging out in there. They're feeding on all sorts of little bait fish and feeding on all sorts of like crustaceans and things. And the bait fish might even be feeding on that. So I've seen many, in some scenarios, you have huge winds and all of a sudden you have this giant schools of mackerel get pushed in, or giant schools of bunker get pushed in because they're filter feeders. So when the rocks and stuff get all kicked up, there's a lot of particles in the water, and those bunker are happy because they can just swim around in there. And whoo, that's my Massachusetts accent came out there. They swim around in there and the bait will start, like they'll start sucking up all the little particles, and it will be all, it's pretty awesome. And that's what kind of filters all of the bait fish around, or it makes the bait fish, because they're like the bunker, in my opinion, are the best bait to have around. And there are certain scenarios where you have a lot of bunker around and a hurricane comes through and it's just heaven, because the bass are so aggressive on bottle plugs. Really, you can throw a hot stove in there and they'll eat it. And that's some of the best fishing. And something else, I mean, when that happens, you throwing like a bucktail in there, and it's just the perfect size. I like to find bucktails that have a little bit more hair on them, a little bit more bulk to it, because then they don't tend to get stuck in the rocks as easy. Although I have thrown Sparrow, like the half ounce Sparrow, and I've caught a 40-inch bass on that in huge surf. So sometimes, if that's all you have in there, you might be able to get lucky, and you might be able to pull a nice sized bass out of an area. I do think that it's something that is a very intimidating way to fish when there's huge surf. And I think a lot of people, including myself, early on in my fishing, I was always intimidated by it. And I know guys that are really, really good, and they just hate fishing hurricanes because they say, oh, fishing's super unpredictable. And it's super difficult to, you know, be out on your rock and you catch fish. And to a certain extent, I agree with that. But to another extent, I think that the fishing is lights out when it's a hurricane. I just think that it's something that is, if you can really fish it. And as I said, some of the best fishermen I know are ones that can actually fish hurricanes really well. It's a really hard skill to learn, because it's one thing to learn how to catch a striped bass, a big striped bass, but it's a whole nother thing to learn a condition that happens very rarely. And something that happens very rarely is huge surf and hurricanes. It happens maybe once or twice a season. You're going to have a big hurricane move through, and it's a hard thing to learn because it doesn't happen every day, and it's gone before it's even there, you know. But a lot of the time you prepare for it and you're like, okay, I'm excited, I'm going to go out. And then you end up just getting seaweed and getting all this different stuff there's all these different factors that end up kind of throwing a wrench into things. And yeah, when you have a blow for a few days and it's really blowing, especially on Cape Ann, you get all sorts of eelgrass and seaweed, and it just becomes it just doesn't become very fun to fish. But then, in other scenarios, you'll be able to, you'll be fishing it and the water, it'll be blowing north, and then all of a sudden the wind switches and it's blowing 40, 50 miles an hour straight in south, for example, or it could be west. In the best case scenarios, you'll have like a west or like a north wind on Cape Ann. It's like deadly. And if you have that like west or north wind, and you have that like right, you can get it right in your face, that's when you can really just start hammering away on fish. And it's blowing like one direction and then it switches and starts blowing the other direction, and it's blowing like really hard and the water's clear, but you have big surf. That's something that is so rare. But if that happens, it can be really, really fun fishing. I think something that people doesn't get to happen too often with a lot of people. And then I guess as a plug bag goes for me, when I'm fishing conditions like that, I'm having, as I said before, I like to carry a few different array of plugs. I like something that's going to kind of be shocking to a lot of you guys, is I like a swimming plug. Something like, because I don't throw them very often, but I do like carrying some sort of like a bomber long shot. I think that that's something that can, in certain scenarios, be good. You can swim those things and they have decent casting distance and they tend to pull pretty big fish. I rarely throw them, however, though, because most of the time I'm either going to be throwing a metal lip swimmer, I'm going to be throwing a glide bait, I'm going to be throwing a darter, a bottle darter, a needlefish, or a bucktail. And those tend to be the ones that I'll throw. I don't generally throw during the daytime. If we're talking about like more daytime plugs, another one that I really like throwing during the day is a, can you see that up there? The Polaris Poppers or the Super Strike Little Neck Poppers. That type of a popper is very, very productive for hurricane conditions. I've caught some seriously large fish on them before, and you can swim them, you can pop them. They're pretty awesome casting as well. Something I would highly suggest during the day. Also throwing pencil poppers when it's not too windy, because once it gets windy, you get everything falls apart. Although some people can work them with your rod tip at a low angle. But that's really, I mean, I even find that really difficult to do. So I wouldn't highly suggest fishing pencils. But if you can, you can pretty much fish them the same way. If you have that wave sweep, you can, and you time everything right. It's very important to time stuff when you're fishing a pencil or a popper for that matter, even like a normal Polaris popper. If you time the wave where the wave crashes and you can cast out, you can work that in, and especially if you can get a little bit of wave sweep coming, that's when things go down. That's when you get some serious, serious fish coming up and smashing the plugs. And I've had a few times where, you know, you have these huge bass leaping out of the water and you're like, come on, guy, you pick it up. But, and then when it finally happens, it's pretty awesome. And so I really do enjoy using like a pencil popper or a Polaris popper during the day for hurricane conditions, as well as as I said earlier, I am going to be throwing like a bucktail in that. And I try to go as light as I can. If I can get away with throwing like an ounce bucktail during a hurricane, I'm going to try to throw an ounce. Generally, I'm going to be stuck with throwing an ounce and a half, which is fine. But every half ounce you go up, the faster it's going to be into the bottom. And I think that the only reason I'd go up from an ounce to an ounce and a half is casting distance. And that really is tough a lot of the time. Bucktails don't like to cast very well. I find they kind of cast like a shoe when they're like an ounce or maybe like half ounce to an ounce. They don't really cast that well as far as a plug goes. So they can be a little bit tough to use. But yeah, I mean, that's definitely a plug that is underused during the day, in my opinion. A lot of people throw them at night, but throw them during the day. They really produce during the day. And sometimes the way you want to fish them is on the drop in the rocks, as you cast it out into the white water and you reel up tight and you just hold onto that rod and you let it sink. And I had some of the most fun fishing this fall doing that, casting into the big waves, reeling up, letting it sink, and you just let the thing fall down. You feel that little tick and you don't know if you're hooking to a 25 inch bass or a 45 inch bass, but when you hook into that fish, it would be awesome. And I was using the GSB 9'2" Skinner. It's like the 101 9', but like 101M with like a foot. I don't know. It's something like that. It's this GSB Skinner rod. Is an awesome bucktailing rod. Obviously, like, he's the man when it comes to bucktailing, but at least for the rocks, as you guys know, I love that 9' rod. I'm actually going to get the 101 10' rod, just to add a little bit more length on it for fishing off the beaches. And I also really want to try there's another lamb-glass rod that I'm not going to really speak about upon because I haven't really fished it. So regardless, but, anyway, but those are, like, that was a fun rod to fish. But the way that they sink in that current and you just let them, oh, I mean, talk about, like, we're getting into spring. Spring's happening pretty soon now. I'm recording this on the, what's the date here? It's April 10th today. And I'm expecting to see bass around the 25th, 26th of April on Cape Ann. So I'm really getting, I'm feeling the itch right now to fish pretty badly. And so even talking about this or just reliving casting it out there, catching it, the thing, letting it sink, and then feeling that tick on the end of my line, the hook setting into that fish, that is what I live for. That hook set, that initial, like, you don't know what it is. When you hook into that fish, it can be the biggest run, you know, all this weight. I mean, it's such a crazy feeling, that like first tick, and that's what really gets me going. And so I'm just very excited for that, the first fish that I hook into, and I'm just like, I'm always shocked every year when I hook into the fish. I'm like, wow, you know, after like, you know, because sometimes you mess around in the estuaries or whatever, but or in the estuaries, you mess around. I haven't talked about this either. So I feel like I haven't talked about this. If I have, I apologize. But I caught my first fish of 2021 two weeks ago or a week ago. So I don't fish for any other species, period, but striped bass. Like that's it. That's all I fish for. And I was going and checking out some herring runs, and I was like, in my mind, I was like, well, maybe what I'll do is I'll just carry a little herring paddle tail that I use generally for just early spring striped bass when they're on herring and whatever. But I was like, you know, I'll carry this around. If there's some largemouth bass or pike or whatever, I'll, you know, just throw that around. And it's cold. I mean, it's not that warm out. And this was 2 weeks ago, I think. And I walk out there with my thing and my Lamblass Carbon Surf 9-foot light. So it's like 3/8 to 2 ounces. So it's a pretty much overkill. My Vansol VSX 150. And I cast out my 30-pound braid and 30-pound leader. Cast out there. I'm reeling it in. First cast, boom. I catch a pickerel and I hook into this thing and I'm laughing because I was just so not expecting to catch a fish. And then I end up hooking into a pickerel, which for most people is a trash fish. And it's so funny. I was saying, like, for most saltwater fishermen, any freshwater fish is a trash fish. And for most freshwater fishermen, a pickerel is a trash fish. And so, so it's so funny to me just because the, it was just so funny to me that I caught a pickerel because it's such a trash fish for so many people. And I was just laughing so hard because I was just not expecting to hook into that fish at all. And, yeah, anyway, but that was just such a funny thing to do is catch a fish like that. But I'm always so shocked in the spring when you hook into that first bass of the season and it pulls and you're like, damn, this thing has got some power. And it always makes me laugh because I'm always, every single year, you know, in the past handful of years, the first bass I've caught in the past handful of years have always been high 20-inch bass for some reason. So I'm always like, whenever I hook into a fish, I'm always like, wow, this is a hard-fighting fish. And it's like, that's definitely going to be the case every year. As far as like, whenever I hook into the fish, I'm always shocked about how powerful they are. And it's true, like striped bass have some power and it's not as, I feel like the first fish of the season means more than almost every single fish that I catch since then. It's just such a meaningful fish to me because you so rarely get, you have the whole winter. The winter is so freaking long and you get the itch so badly. For me, not somebody that doesn't fish in the winter time, to get that first spring schoolie is like such a relief and it's so awesome. So I really do hope that I get to do some earlier spring fishing. Maybe I can get out, not this week, but next week I'm going to try to go, I know it'll be pretty close to them being here, but I'm going to try to go a little past Cape Cod and try to catch some either holdover / fresh schoolies / maybe some larger fish. If I end up fishing with somebody that's home waters out there and they're like in the prime part of their season, spring run. And so hopefully I can get into some nicer fish, but any fish to me that time of year is a nice fish. I don't care if I'm catching a 5-inch striped bass or 35-inch striped bass. I'm going to be stoked either way. But yeah, I'm getting really excited and I'm getting the itch bad to hook into a fish. But yeah, I mean, it just gets me going. You know, as I was saying, like being able to cast out there, feel that, you know, feel the line sink down into the current, feel that tick of a fish and boom, hooks it into it. There's nothing better than that. Can't wait until I do that. And I, you know, wrap my hand around the line and I end up cutting the crap out of my hand the first time. My finger's going to be raw. Because it's so funny because most people, I can throw by, you know, July, I can throw any plug. I don't care if it's 10 ounces. I could throw it 20. I've had literally a 10-ounce eel, like rigged eel. And I get such a callus on my finger because I cut it so many times that I can throw anything. I don't need a Band-Aid or a Band-Aid or like a piece of athletic tape around my finger. But yeah, it's always the first beginning of the season where you're cutting your hands, you know, you get those first few fish. It's just such a, you know, I'm so excited. That's all I'm really saying. I'm very excited because it's happening. It's going to happen very soon. And I have all these big plans for this next season. I really hope that I end up executing I know you have all these lofty ideas over the winter because you just have time to think, and then a lot of stuff is not necessarily like realistic. And it's unfortunate because, you know, I'd love to have everything be super realistic and me be able to actually catch things, but sometimes it doesn't work out. You know, like I might not do well at all in the estuaries this year, even though it's one of my biggest goals. It's such a short window, but, and I'll really try hard. I mean, I'm going to really put in my time and really try to, you know, pull some rabbits out of hats, to catch some fish. And I know it's one of those things that's it's probably the hardest thing to do, but God willing, really. I mean, if we get right conditions, we're catching some big, I mean, I can't imagine certain areas not producing. That's really all I'm trying to say here. All I'm saying is if we can get conditions where it's like you get a big storm coming through and it blows those bass in early in the spring, the water temps are good, and everything works out well, I can imagine it being pretty productive. Yeah, I mean, I can imagine it being a pretty productive spring. And hopefully that works out for me. It's very possible it won't. But regardless, thank you guys for watching this podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope that I can keep this podcast train alive. Again, thank you guys for watching, and I'll see you next time.